Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is an online marketing strategist and author of several books on marketing, most notably, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, with over 300,000 copies sold to date. At the height of the dot-com boom, he was vice president of marketing at NewsEdge Corporation, an online news distributor with $70 million in revenue. In 2002, after NewsEdge was sold, he was fired. So, like any entrepreneur would do, he started his own business to refine his ideas, work with select clients, and teach others through writing and speaking. The marketing programs he has since developed are responsible for selling well over $1 billion in products and services worldwide. Now, let's hack David Meerman Scott. I want to thank today's sponsor, FreshBooks. More than just a sponsor, FreshBooks plays a huge role in keeping me and my business organized and profitable. And this is really, really obvious to me now, having just gone through another year end. Usually the end of the year would be an incredible headache for me and my accountant, but not this year. Now, rather than handing my accountant a giant box of papers and receipts, I simply email her my reports, journal entries, and it's not only easier, but it's way more cost-effective than paying her to sort through it herself. The best part was that it was so easy to learn how to use, and whenever I've had an issue, their support team is awesome. They're voted the number one customer support team in the world. With FreshBooks support, help is forever free, and I get to speak to a real, live human every single time. Try FreshBooks for free today and for 30 days with no obligation. Setup only takes a minute, no credit card is required, and you can cancel at any time. Go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How did you hear about us section when signing up? And we are back on Hack the Entrepreneur, and we have another amazing guest today. David, welcome to the show.
John, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
It's absolutely my pleasure, David. Let's jump straight into it, can we?
Yeah.
David, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do do you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
The one thing that I do is follow what feels right. And specifically, I've noticed that when I see a pattern in the world that no one else sees, or at least no one that I have run across sees, I know I have something that I need to run with. And that's happened to me probably a half dozen times in my life. And every time it happens, it's like, oh my gosh, I have this in the pit of my stomach. I have this burning desire. I just absolutely have to do this thing. A couple of times it happened to me once when I was a couple of years into my career, I was working on a bond trading desk and kind of not really liking it and didn't really look forward to the long Wall Street life. And I had an opportunity to move to Japan all by myself, age 26, to start an office for an economic consulting company. And in the pit of my stomach, and just knew I had to do that. I knew I had to do that. The pattern I was seeing at the time was that Asia is a really, really important place. But this is way back in 1987, when very few people were thinking that. Another one, which will be near to your heart, is I had this absolute pattern I was seeing that no one else was talking about, that the first social networks were started by the Grateful Dead, the rock band, because the idea that the Grateful Dead started this community of people to trade tapes because they were one of the only bands to allow fans to record their concerts. And as a result of that, they created this fantastic way that people could come together, and they built this incredible community before Mark Zuckerberg was even born. And it ultimately led to them being the most popular touring band in history, the Grateful Dead. So I wrote a book called Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead, and I know that you've got one on your shelf. Thank you very much. And, you know, so I see these patterns, and when I have a pattern in my mind that I'm seeing that other people aren't seeing, I have to act on it.
Excellent. Yeah, I do. I love the book.
Thank you.
It's actually on my desk right now. But so you see the Grateful Dead as creating the first, it's like social media, but I mean, it was obviously non-digital. It was like an analog real life version.
Yeah, I see that what the Grateful Dead accomplished is creating a tribe of people, a social network of people who gathered to, you know, get together primarily and secondarily to listen to the music, frankly. And as a result of the moves they made, they created this fantastic network. And I think that all businesses can take a lesson out of the Grateful Dead's playbook in order to create social networks. Now it's much easier to do so on the web, but there's certainly a physical component as well.
Yeah, very well said. And so you say you look for patterns,
yeah,
and then you want to feel it in the pit of your stomach.
Yes.
That's like that gut feeling. Is this something, David, that you've always feel you've been able to do, or have you had to nourish it and sort of grow the capability of being able to feel what is right within your stomach?
I have kind of cultivated it. And the way that I've found that I've cultivated it, particularly in the last 10 years, because I'm now able to almost create that in a way that I wasn't able to in the past, is I look at what is interesting to me and what I'm seeing that I don't feel other people are seeing. And the way I do that is the first thing I look at is, what am I tweeting about? What am I putting out there in short form content in the form of what I'm putting out on Twitter? And then I think after I've tweeted a few things, you know, what ends up bubbling up to the blog? What ends up becoming more longer form content? What are the things that I like to do that I enjoy? And what am I writing about? And every once in a while, as I'm thinking about, and I do specifically think about it, I say, you know, I'll set aside a couple hours and I'll just go through all my tweets over the last year. In fact, I'm going to do that over the next, I typically do that at the end of the year. I'm going to go through all my tweets for this year, and then I'm going to go through all of my blog posts and just see if I'm seeing any patterns. And if I do, I think, wow, am I the only one who's seeing this pattern? And two other times that it happened to me in the past roughly decade was, I was seeing marketing on the web as essentially the idea of publishing content. And that was a concept no one had talked about. So I wrote a book about that, started to do speeches about that. And the other thing I saw was that increasingly in our world, the ways that we can communicate with one another has gone to real time. You know, in the past, you know, you called someone on the phone, you left a voicemail, maybe they called you back. You sent someone a letter through the mail, you sent them a fax. These things were not really real time. Today, it is real time. It's Twitter. It's essentially all the things I learned on a Bond desk. So those are a couple of other patterns I saw.
Interesting. And I've never heard of somebody going back through their Twitter, but it's got to be actually an interesting thing of a year of tweets.
It's a year of tweets and a year of blog posts. And there's not very many, but I look through some videos and some other things too. But it's mainly tweets and blog posts.
Is there a pattern you ever see of where you tweet like a madman for like a week and then, or 2 weeks, and then you miss, say, a week or two? Like, are you very consistent in it? Do you just keep it up? I know that I go through bursts and I just love it, and then I get sidetracked doing other stuff, but I see some people and they're just consistent all the time. It's impressive. How do you find yourself working?
I'm more on the consistent side, but I wouldn't say it's impressive. It's just, and the reason is because I've made that kind of media part of my lifestyle. You know, in the same way that I've made exercise part of my lifestyle, I exercise an hour every morning. I've also made real-time media and real-time content creation part of my life. You know, I don't even think about tweeting it. I just do it. Just like I don't think about exercise, I just do it. So that's not a real issue. But when I go back and look, I'll just see things that'll really interest me. Like, for example, I'll notice that I probably tweet an image, a photograph, I don't know, 1 out of 10 tweets, something like that. I'm just making up the number. It's something like that. And I'll notice that maybe 10% of those are at rock concerts. I'm like, well, what does that mean? You know, every time I'm at a show, I want to take a picture and send it out. And I do go to a lot of rock concerts. So then I'm like, what can I learn from that? What's interesting there? And this pattern I saw was, wow, I just love going to rock concerts. I love checking out how things happen there. And I've spent the last sort of 2 years honing my speaking skills. I speak about 40 times a year, paid speaking gigs. And I model the way I speak to an audience on what I've learned from going to rock concerts. You know, what can I learn from watching Mick Jagger live? What can I learn from watching a punk band live? What can I learn from watching any kind of musician live? And how do they work the stage? How does the stage work for them? How does lighting and sound work for them? What are the things they're doing? How are they holding an audience? How quickly do they move or not quickly they move? And man, did it help my speaking skills to, again, this pattern that I saw from my tweets of photographs of rock concerts led me to think, why am I so interested in this stuff? What can I learn from this for my business and my entrepreneurial life? And well, maybe I can learn from the stage presence of these rock stars and apply that to what I do on my stage, which is completely a different stage, of course, because it's no music behind me. It's all me talking. But I learned a hell of a lot of things and have completely transformed the way I do my presentations. And as a result, I'm getting much better ratings from people in terms of how I score for the conferences that have feedback mechanisms. And I'm getting invited back to the same presentations and conferences again and again and again, because and getting lots of referrals as a result.
Have you?
So I don't know anybody else. I've never heard of anybody else who said, I'm going to model my public speaking on rock concerts.
I love it. That's a great way to do it.
You know, it's a weird pattern, but it works for me.
It is. So you go to a lot of rock concerts.
Yeah.
And it's the end of 2014. Tomorrow, I guess. I need to ask you, what is the best concert you saw this year?
This year, Jack White, no question about it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, nice. Absolutely. Yeah. I've seen the Raconteurs and the Dead Weather, a couple of his bands previously. So I had seen Jack White. I never saw the White Stripes, although I had tickets 3 or 4 different times, but ended up having speaking gigs and couldn't do it. But he was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was also great because it was at Fenway Park here in Boston, and I had really good seats. I was in the 6th row center. So it's, you know, always nice to have great seats. But he's a fantastic musician, really, really works the stage. I like the music. It was really wonderful. I'm such a geek. I'm going to open up my file right now to tell you how much of a geek I am. I have an Excel spreadsheet with every concert I've seen. And some of them I can't remember, you know, from I'm 53 years old, back when I was in high school, some of the shows I can't actually remember exactly, but that database is now up to 603 concerts.
Wow.
And so of those 603 concerts, Jack White, top 10.
Really?
And it was in 2014, right? So
nice.
I'm talking going back. I saw Bob Marley's last concert, the Led Zeppelin, the Clash, Frank Zappa, lots of people who are no longer with us, Muddy Waters, and putting all those together, I would say Jack White, top 10.
That's impressive.
Pretty awesome.
That's really impressive. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, now all the fun and the nightlife is gone, so let's go to
back
let's
to work.
Move to work.
Work is fun.
Yeah, let's move to, totally, no, it is, exactly, but it's not a rock, well, you're trying to turn it into a rock concert,
which
is
great. So.
40 speaking gigs per year, I believe you spoke on every continent.
I have spoken in 41 countries and all 7 continents. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. And you exercise an hour every morning and you tweet constantly. You're a fairly full schedule. So I would like to know how you do this. So today's a work day. Can you walk us through, say, your first 30 minutes or your morning rituals, say, to that you set up your day?
Yeah. I have a weird. Kind of a weird ritual, or at least to me, it's not weird. It's perfect for me, but for other people, it is. The first thing is, though, when I run my own business, so work, pleasure, my time, work time, it all merges. It all becomes one. And I don't really think about it as one is work time and one is not work time. Just on a macro level, I'm always looking for speaking gigs that I can combine what I love to do around the speaking gig. If I can combine a rock concert around a speaking gig, and I've done that many times, I will. If I can combine surfing with a speaking gig, which I've done many times. I'll do that. I've surfed in Australia, in Thailand, and let's see, where else have I surfed on the back of a speaking gig?
Wow.
Indonesia, a bunch of other places. Or if I can scuba dive on the back of a speaking gig. Just last month, I was in Trinidad for a speaking gig, so I popped over to Tobago. And many times I'll be able to bring my wife. So if I can bring my lovely wife on a speaking gig, and we've gone to some amazing places together over the years, then I'm happy to do that. So the work and the pleasure kind of commingle. But a day, I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Which is weird. I know, I get that, but that's what works for me. Then I jump onto the social networks and check email. That might be an hour. Then I exercise for at least an hour, sometimes an hour and a half. I have a breakfast, take a shower, and then I'm in my office usually around eight, something like that. I read when I'm eating breakfast, I spend almost an hour with the print newspaper, the Boston Globe or whatever the local paper is in the city I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all digital for me. Analog print is a good thing. And I'm in the office in the morning. I typically am heads down. That's when I do my long form writing. That's when I will, I'll work on a blog post. I'll work on a section in a book, things like that, where I very, very rarely accept meetings for mornings, telephone calls or anything for mornings. Then I go to an early lunch, maybe 11 o'clock. And then I'm back. I don't spend much time with lunch, back pretty quickly. And afternoon typically are things that don't require as much head down thought, media interviews, social networking stuff, planning out what I'm going to do in the future, things like that. I get home early. I get home between 4:30 and 5, have dinner with my lovely wife. And if she's home, she is now actually, my daughter, who's 21. And then I'm in bed early, 7:30 sometimes, 8:30. If I'm getting past 9 o'clock, my eyes are starting to fall and it's hard to stay awake. When I travel, especially through time zones, I try to maintain the same schedule, but if I'm only going to be on the ground for a couple of days, and typically like if I go to a speaking gig, that's only a 1 hour speaking gig, I usually arrive the night before, do my thing. Sometimes I leave that day or early the next morning, depending on the location of the gig. Sometimes I will stick to my own time zone rather than try to change. So because I do all that stuff so early, if I go to Europe, it works fine because I don't really change a whole lot. I'm still getting up a similar time, but it's 5 hours later. So instead of getting up at 3, I'll get up at a human hour. And then a little West Coast is a little more difficult because I don't get up at 11 p.m. It's not that radical.
Yeah. I was wondering, how did you discover that 3 a.m. was your time?
Because I love the morning and I kind of want the longest morning I can get.
I see that as night.
No.
I'm still up at 3 a.m. oftentimes working. Like it's quiet. I can just kind of plow through stuff.
Same idea, except I'm doing it in the first
exactly.
part of my day. You're
yeah.
doing it in part of your day.
Maybe that would.
Yeah, it just works for me. It works great. There's no phone calls. I respond to emails, but almost never people pop back to me. I do have, I've got Twitter followers all over the globe, so I'll engage with people in Australia and New Zealand and Singapore, Hong Kong, China, India, all these other places, Europe. That early in the morning, people who are not normally up during the regular North American business hours are up.
Exactly, which is nice.
Yeah.
And so you sound very somewhat habitual in how you
pretty much
and how you deal with your day. Is there, say, one habit that you've tried to adopt into your life and you haven't, like you've struggled with it?
Ooh, interesting question. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
So you, all the exercise, healthy eating, all that stuff, you just stick right to it?
Well, the exercise and healthy eating is as of my 50th birthday. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, three years ago, I weighed 210 pounds. I'm down to 158 now.
Holy man.
And about 6% body fat. So yeah, I'm really, really, really fit and healthy right now. And I was not when I was 49 and three quarters. So I needed to make a change. But that's become a lifestyle change. It's become, I don't think about it anymore. It's my lifestyle.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's who I am. But, for several decades, I was the opposite.
Yeah. So you have to make that change at some point.
I did. Yeah.
Okay, David, struggles and failures we're going to move to. As entrepreneurs, and I mean, as humans in general, one of our greatest struggles is the fear of being wrong, making mistakes, and just failing. Can you take us, say, from something in your business, but can you tell us how to be wrong?
How to be wrong. Wow. Okay. So I just, when I, you know, I talked about those patterns that I see, I talked about things that are interesting to me. If I think something's interesting and I want to do it, I just do it. Push it out there, see what happens. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, well, shoot, I tried it. I don't want to end up at age 60 or age 70 having a regret of having seen a pattern but not acted on it. So I tend to just go for it. I do kind of regret on one hand, but I'm incredibly glad on another, that I never was really able to manage the corporate game, the office politics thing. So the first 15 years of my career roughly was spent in companies, mainly larger companies. And I'm not sure whether I'm not made for a large company or I'm not made to work for someone else. I haven't really figured out yet what that means, but it is kind of a regret of mine that I wasn't able to manage that whole office politics thing better. But if I had, perhaps I wouldn't be an entrepreneur, you know.
Exactly. It would.
Perhaps I would be, you know, some corporate person even still now. So I suppose it was a good thing that I wasn't able to master that.
Perfect. I love it. Okay. Projects or ideas, whatever you, I call things projects. It could be a book. It could be a new, anything you want to bring into your business or your life as something you want to take on. You've written a lot of books now. And how would you at this point, would an idea or this concept come to you? How would you decide that this is the right one, that it needs to become part of like your writing portfolio and this is the next book? What's that feeling going to be? Or do you sort of start compiling ideas and then whittle it down? Or how's that going to work for you, David?
Yeah, good question. So the first thing is we talked earlier about how I go and look at my tweets. I look at my blog posts. I typically do that at least once a year. And I'm kind of thinking, wow, is there anything that I've been focused on that might make, say, a medium form length of content, something like an ebook or, you know, something short. And if that happens, I think, well, yeah, maybe I should just push this out there. I did that a couple of years ago with a book called Newsjacking. It's actually ebook only. It's on Kindle and iPad and all those other platforms. And it's very short. It can be read in just an hour. And Newsjacking is the art and science of injecting your ideas into a breaking news story. And so for that book, it was like, yeah, you know, let's just do it. Doesn't need to be a big deal. Just crank it out, get it out there, because it wasn't a huge, didn't require a huge amount of content. Another book that came out in March is called Marketing the Moon. And I would, it's about the marketing and public relations aspects of the Apollo Moon program. And Marketing the Moon was an interesting one because it's a little bit like Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead, the other book I did, where I looked at something I was writing about, something I was interested in, and, you know, an important hobby of mine that I could then turn into something that I could write about and turn into something related to marketing and sales, which is my topic that I speak about. And I'm actually a huge fan of the Apollo Moon program. The idea that we sent 12 humans to the surface of the moon is in the 1960s and early 70s is radical to me. I think it's amazing. And so over the past decade or so, I've actually collected artifacts from the Apollo Moon program. And I have an item that was used by the astronauts on the spacecraft from every Apollo mission, which is part of my collection. And so I actually then started to think about Apollo. The Apollo program was a triumph of marketing as much as it was a triumph of technology, because we had to convince the American people to fund this audacious, crazy, nutty project. So I thought, wow, you know, what can all businesses learn from the Apollo Moon program? And ended up writing a book about it. Came out from MIT Press. Now, I'm someone who flunked calculus, and to have a book come out by MIT Press is, I'm extremely proud of that. You know, if that doesn't awesome. Prove you can do anything in your life, I don't know what does. You know, flunking calculus in college, never taking another math course again, and having arguably the most important mathematics-related school put out your book is kind of crazy. But anyway, the book's done pretty well and it's been a lot of fun. But, you know, these ideas that come to me, I just feel like, yeah, this is something no one else is talking about. This is something no one else is doing. I think I should crank this one out. Now, what I'm working on now, and it's probably going to take another 2 years, which is really exciting for me, is I sold the movie rights for Marketing the Moon. It's to Robert Stone. He's an Academy Award nominated filmmaker. And his last several films have all premiered at Sundance. Very well-respected documentary filmmaker. So I've signed on as a co-producer of this film and will be working on a film version of my book, Marking the Moon. And the title of the film will be The Men Who Sold the Moon. It's targeted for 2017 release. But it's sort of interesting to me now to be focused on the creation of a movie, something I've never done, something that sounds really cool and really interesting. And I'm at the luxurious point in my career that I can go down this nutty little path if I want to.
That's awesome. It's probably an amazing place to be. And now you're taking it to the big screen. That's really interesting. So that take.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It's going to be a feature film. I mean, we're still in fundraising mode. He needs to raise a little bit more money, but we're pretty close. And I'm quite confident that the film will get made.
Excellent. And this takes me then to all the cool things you've done. You've surfed in amazing places. You've seen amazing concerts. You've spoke on every continent in 41 countries. If your career, unfortunately, was to end today, would you be happy, David, with the legacy you've got to leave up till this point?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. Absolutely no question about it. And I think my biggest legacy is that thousands and thousands of people have been exposed to the ideas that I write and speak about, either because they read one of my books, and you know, I've sold quite a few books, probably close to 1 million copies of my books. My books are in 26 different languages, and people have seen me speak at all of these events that I speak at. And every single day, I get emails from people, or tweets from people, or Facebook or LinkedIn notes from people who say to me, "Thank you very much for writing your ideas or delivering your speeches or your blog, because I've been able to make use of those ideas in my business and I've been able to grow my business as a result. Thank you very much, David." And to me, that's my greatest legacy. The idea that there are businesses out there that wouldn't have grown as quickly without people having read my thoughts, that there's, in fact, many people have told me that they started their company because they thought of an idea, or at least the marketing and sales strategies around creating an idea that they learned from one of the things that I put out there. So to me, that's an amazing legacy, that there's actually people who are employed that wouldn't be otherwise, that there's companies that exist that wouldn't otherwise. And to me, I'm incredibly proud of that. And if I were to go south for whatever reason today, that will live on. And and that's really, really cool.
Yeah, that is really, really cool. And you should be really proud of that. David, we've got to talk about a lot about you, your business, your books, but can you specifically tell the audience where they can go find out more about you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So DM Scott is my Twitter ID, DMSCOTT. And you can Google my name, David Meerman Scott, to find stuff. I would specifically point to a slideshare I wrote that I put out a couple of months ago. It's gotten 150,000 views so far. It's called The New Rules of Selling. So just go to Google, type in The New Rules of Selling, find that slideshare. And that's sort of a primer and sort of the ideas that I talk about.
Excellent. I will link to the slideshare and to your Twitter in the show notes for everyone so they're easy to find.
Awesome.
So all those people that email you, tweet you, LinkedIn you, Facebook you every day and thank you, I want to join them. And thank you as well, David, because this has been awesome.
Oh, thank you, John.
And I appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. David, thank you so much for joining us. That was a lot of fun. And I don't know, I learned a lot about, I guess, you, your philosophies about, I guess, life and business. And I admire what you're doing, speaking a lot, teaching a lot of people, really kind of pushing your ideas and thoughts forward while traveling the world, bringing your wife, going to see amazing rock concerts. And I appreciate you telling me what your favorite show was. Jack White, that's cool. I'll put a link to Jack White in the show notes For anyone who doesn't know who Jack White is or the White Stripes, check it out. I'll put a YouTube video for you. But David, you said one thing, and that one thing has really stuck with me. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
If I think something's interesting and I want to do it, I just do it. Push it out there. See what happens. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, well, shoot, I tried it. You know, I don't want to end up at age 60 or age 70 having a regret of having seen a pattern but not acted on it. So I tend to just go for it.
And that's the hack. David, wow. This is weird because actually about 45 minutes or an hour ago, I wrote up an email to the weekly newsletter that I send out. And it was called At Least I Tried, which it's really a big, powerful thing for me right now that I'm not worried about taking shots and going after things that don't work out because I'm going after things and taking shots to make my life better, to do cool things every single day. Every single day I'm doing stuff. So it doesn't matter that I miss 80% or 90% of those shots or those things that I try. I'm not going to sit around and then just once in a while try something and be like, oh, it didn't work. I refuse to be 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 or whenever and just look back and just be like, I wonder what I could have done. What could I have reached? What could I have achieved? What kind of cool stuff could I have done? What parts of the world could I have seen and I didn't? I refuse to do that anymore. I want to push everything in every way that I can to do the stuff that I want. And I absolutely refuse to care when I fail, when I screw up, when I don't do as well as I should. I think it's a good mentality. I think it's just something. There's nothing worse. There's no worse regret, I don't think, than not trying something. You very rarely regret doing things. You very much seem to regret things you didn't do. So I refuse to not try. I want to know that at least I tried. So David, that was weird. I didn't know I was actually going to do your episode. And then I brought it up and then I started listening to it. And I found that really weird that email came out. And then an hour later, I'm listening to your episode and you made the exact same point. And I just had to pick it out because I absolutely love that. So thank you so much, David. That's powerful stuff. And it really means a lot to me. And I thank you for sharing it. To get on that email newsletter, it's obviously free, right? Hacktheentrepreneur.com. You'll see me standing up there. It's in the Tokyo subway system. We took out the background, but that's me standing there. My daughter took the picture with my phone this past winter. So get on the email. I send out my best thoughts, my best email I can come up with once a week. Seem to be getting a lot of good feedback. People seem to like it. I get a lot of replies. You got access to me as soon as you get that email that gives you access to my phone or to my laptop. Hit reply on any email I send you and ask me any questions you want. Tell me what you're thinking. Tell me what you're working on. I'd love to hear it. So hacktheentrepreneur.com if you have not been there. Thank you so much again for joining me. I know there's a ton of podcasts out there now. But there's only one Hack the Entrepreneur, right? But thank you so much. I really do truly appreciate it. I appreciate you taking your time. And I love when you reach out to me. So please do that if you can. Also, if you're on your phone right now or on a computer listening to this, if you have a chance, hacktheentrepreneur.com/iTunes or go into your podcast app, go to Hack the Entrepreneur within iTunes. Leave me a rating and a review. I have 230 something 5-star reviews. They help so, so much to get me to boost up the rankings. That gets me more listeners. That gets me more amazing guests to share with you. I would absolutely, truly appreciate it. If you do want to take the 2 minutes to do that and do me a huge favor, attach your Twitter name, at your name, whatever it happens to be on Twitter, so I can go by, say hi, and just thank you for taking the time to do that. Thanks again. Seriously, I really, really do appreciate it. And until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.